Good afternoon, folks. It's that time of the day again, time for the elephant in the room here on WJAS 1320 AM and Talk 99.1 FM. This is your host, Sam DeMarco, joined in studio by my trusty executive director, John Snader. As I always say, the man of few words. If you have heard him say a few words, you are very fortunate. We're also joined in studio by our trusty producer, dazzling dandy Daryl Grandy. Daryl's the man that makes the magic happen. He's the man that gets our voices out to you, our listeners. And for that, we're very thankful. Daryl, thank you for joining us here today.
Well, thank you, Sam.
Well, folks, we have a great show lined up today. And I have another guest in studio today who's a good friend. But let me tell you a little bit about Rob Vecchio. Rob is one of the original principals that launched Denton's Cohen and Grigsby Public Affairs number of years ago. He's a seasoned professional with nearly 20 years of public affairs experience. If a major public policy debate is occurring in Pennsylvania, chances are Rob is a big part of that discussion. Now, as a lobbyist, Rob has successfully lobbied on behalf of for-profit companies, nonprofit organizations, and trade association clients. His vast experience and strong bipartisan contacts have provided clients with the ability to shape issues, and he's now a partner with a new venture that he started here in January of this year. It's C&G Strategy. So, Rob, welcome to the show.
Great. Thanks, Sam. Appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate you being here, and one of the reasons why we wanted to have you on today was to talk about Jim Roddy, because, I mean, your experience in politics, I just talked about your public affairs experience there, but, I mean, you worked for former Congressman Tim Murphy. And also, you were part of the Roddy administration, were you not?
I was. One of the, I don't want to say the original. We had, I came in the second 2 years of his term as county executive. A guy by the name of Trip Oliver was the first legislative director for Jim Roddy. I came in, again, the second 2 years after service in the state House and state Senate with former state representative Tom Stevenson, and I actually worked for Tim Murphy when he was actually the state senator.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it was his first election to public office, and I served 3 years with him in his administration. So, and then he later became a congressman. So it was exciting. But no, I appreciate it. This has been a bittersweet week for a lot of us with the service for Jim Roddy. Jim Roddy goes down, and he's a game changer for my career. Mm-hmm. You know, I was, when I left Tom Stevenson's office, you know, I, you know, got through his reelect, and, you know, I was in my third year just finishing grad school, and I got the call. I got the call actually from Kent Gates, who was the campaign manager for Jim Roddy. Jim Roddy had moved on, or Trip Oliver had moved on over to the campaign, and they were looking for somebody to fill that last 2 years. And so, you know, this was one of the things I wasn't really looking to go into county government. But, you know, I was actually looking at D.C. I was a single guy thinking about, you know, I already worked in the state Senate, worked in the state House. Maybe time to go to D.C. But, you know, when I met Jim Roddy, it was you can't say no. You know, Jim he was amazing. Walked in, he and I were sitting there and he and kind of not just interviewing, actually offered me the job. And it was interesting because we were in the county executive's office, and there was this conference table. The conference table had this glass top, and there's the county executive with Windex, literally polishing off the fingerprints. That was the end of the day stress reliever for Jim Roddy, which was, you know, he hated the fingerprints, and like he had all these meetings all day long. And Vicky, his assistant, came in and like gave him his Windex with his rag. And as he was talking to me, he was cleaning up the fingerprints. So
that was the Marine. He was making sure that everything was in order.
You're exactly right, Sam. Oh, you're exactly right. And it was a tight ship, right? At the end of the day, he was definitely cleansing the room to get ready for the next day.
So you know, he was quite a character, you know. And you know, like you said, it was a big week. On Wednesday of this week earlier, I saw you at the unveiling of the county executive portraits that the current county executive, Sarah Innamorato, held down at the county courthouse. And it was very nice. I mean, for folks who may not be aware, current county executive Sarah Innamorato held a ceremony or an event Wednesday morning at 9, and you had the families of the Fitzgerald administration. You had Rich Fitzgerald and some of his members of his family, Dan Honorado and some of his family and friends, as well as James Dale Roddy, Jim Roddy's son. Rob, I saw you there. Trip Oliver was there. A number of other folks.
Yeah,
Spence was there.
It was a good ceremony before the bigger one later in the day at Pitt. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was nice because it was, you know, what Roddy set out as county exec, and it came out during the speeches. You know, Trip gave the first one talking about Roddy as, you know, next to the portrait, and then Dan Honorato was next, and then Rich Fitzgerald. But Tripp did a great job, you know, starting it off, talking about the office, talking about what Jim wanted to do as the first county executive. Mm-hmm. He cared more about the office and making sure that office was going to get started right for the future, and less about politics, as we all know. I mean, we went through quite a bit in that first term. And what was interesting is then Dan Honorato came up next, and Dan kind of elaborated on that and said, Jim was amazing, helped with the transition. You know, Jim was the first one. He was always there for Dan. And same thing with Rich Fitzgerald right after that. What they really wanted to show, not just to the people in that room, but just in general, was we got to respect these offices. You know, these offices were created. Jim was on Compact 21. He was one of the ones with the commissioners to make sure that they, you know, they worked to pass the new form of government. And then he was elected county exec, of course. But he wanted to instill that beginning phase for forever, that the county exec's office is what Allegheny County will govern Allegheny County with the county council. And he really respected it to the point where, you know, Dan and Rich, and then to Sarah now, which they see that. And what was nice about that room was all the former staff, not just me, Tripp and I and Vicky, but all of Honorado's staff was in the room. Rich Fitzgerald's staff was in the room, and Sarah's staff, a lot of them were in the room. Yep. And so we got to bond a little bit just to have a conversation about the office. It wasn't politics. Obviously, we're both parties and so forth, but it was nice to actually have that discussion. Just, you know, we're here for the taxpayers. You know, they're here for county exec, you know, the county exec's office, but also county council, you know, and county council, as you know, Sam, because you're part of that fraternity story, whatever we call it now, is you're part of that institution now, which we want to protect the government of Allegheny County, and making sure that moving forward that, you know, we respect the office.
And that's important. I think that's something that was became quite evident, you know, during the speeches of the folks, not just there during the portrait unveiling, but as you said, later in the day at the memorial service. And, you know, for folks who are just casual listeners or casual observers of politics, when we run for office, you have a D by your name or an R or an I. But once you're elected, you represent all the people in Allegheny County or your district. And it's your job to ensure that you serve, you know, the county properly. And that's one of the things that, like, when they talk about Jim, they were talking about as a testament to him that once elected, everyone had a seat at the table.
Everybody did. And that was Jim's legacy is, again, he did have his principles. And it definitely, he was a Republican first and foremost. But he also understood that we needed to take care of issues. And what it was also interesting was during the celebration, we had one of my close Democratic friends came up to me and was like, well, you know, it was just amazing how Sierra Weck passed away right after Roddy.
Yes.
And of course, the quote right after that was, Cyril finally beat Roddy. and this came from the Democrats. And of course, we all actually, and we laughed because, you know, we knew who Roddy and how close he became. Not only when Dan Honorato beat Jim Roddy, they became close friends. And then Rich Fitzgerald, you know, I knew him when he was on county council. And let me tell you, like, it was, we had our moments. Like, we, you know, I walked into the county council room and I'd see former county council member Wayne Fontana and Rich Fitzgerald, and I get the smirk, and I'm like, oh, geez, we're in trouble today.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're coming after us for something that day. But again, it was one of those that, you know, we kind of wish we can get back to that in politics, especially in today's society, because, you know, we had our battles. We fought tooth and nail with them. But afterward, you know, Roddy became close with Sarah Weck. He came close with, they became friends. I mean, they joke around, and those are great stories and everything else, but, and they didn't agree on much, but at least they can have the conversations and then come together on the common good. And that's kind of, we're kind of losing that today.
Well, I think what Jim was able to do when we talk about this is again, he understood that you can be a political opponents and yet not be political enemies.
Absolutely.
Okay? And you know, I I fail too often at this, but I try to take note of the path that he led and try to do the same, in that you can disagree, you make it issue-based, never personal, because when you damage relationships, it's very difficult to try to rebuild those, you know, and to work with folks in the future. And Jim, what Jim was good at, and for folks outside politics, what you may not understand, and you say, well, how could Jim and Cyril Wecht or Jim and Dan Alterado become friends? It's because the people that you competed against sometimes are the ones who've gone through the same experiences that you have. You know, they've been through the fire as well, and they understand, you know, your motivation, your drive, and, you know, what you've been through is more than anyone else. You know, so you in some ways become closer to these folks if it's possible.
Exactly right. Yeah, and it's, you know, and I've seen it throughout my career. You know, it just, again, it came in 96 with Tim Murphy, and then spent 3 years in the Senate. And but again, we were in a district that was former Mike Fisher's district. And mm-hmm. so Mike Fisher, you know, he gave us a lot of guidance about the district, because it wasn't a Republican district. We had a tenacious fight the first year, the first campaign, with a really popular state rep. And we were able to overcome it based on issues. But again, getting back to what you're saying, Sam, it's like, you know, there's a lot has changed since 1996 and what we're seeing. And obviously today, it's what I get concerned about is the influence of money outside of our region. And it's you're seeing it everywhere. And that's really driving a lot of what we're seeing today. I mean, yes, we have social media, we have a lot of things, we have the internet, that sort of thing. Like that's also that ties to it. But this outside money that gets poured into this region is really a concern. And really the more we localize these issues and have these conversations, the more I think we get back to having that discussion with Republicans and Democrats, independents, on solving our issues locally. Because the outside influences are, they don't care about that. They care about what their agenda is.
Well, and I think, and this, we could talk about it for another show, but folks, we just saw that in the most recent municipal elections we had in November of 2023. You know, in the county executive's race, the current county executive, much of her campaign was funded with outside money, money from the Worker Family Party, you know, in New York, you know, from SEIU. While you had our nominee, Joe Rocky, some of his money came from Commonwealth Partners, which is a Pennsylvania firm, but the majority of his money was raised by folks here locally.
Yeah, I mean, there's some truth to that, but it's both sides, as we know. I mean, both parties are doing it, and both sides are seeing this influence, and it's not going to stop, because, you know, at this point, it's the lifeblood of politics, unfortunately, right? And so, you know, it's an arms race. And so if they're going to have money coming from one side, the other side's going to start doing it, and it's going to have impact. We're seeing it in every election. I mean, you're already seeing it in the national politics. We're going to see it this year. This mm-hmm. year, we saw it 2 years ago when, you know, some of our state House and Senate members, I would open up my mailbox, like in September, October, I'd see stacks of attack ads, you know, on both sides. Mm-hmm. That it didn't even make sense anymore. Like, it was like they wasn't even talking about issues. They were just complete slanderous pieces that were coming from these national groups, because they had unlimited resources
right.
and money.
Oh, that's absolutely a problem. I just don't know how you get that money out of it. You know, it's like negative ads.
Yeah.
Everyone complains about negative ads, right? But candidates and consultants continue to use them. Why? Because they work.
Because negativity moves numbers. That's what
right.
they all say. And proven to be true, right?
Yes. And, you know, if we were ever to get back to the day when you're focused on issues, I remember growing up. I'm an old guy here, you know, 65. But I remember growing up. You know, we had two papers at the time. We had the Pittsburgh Press and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette in the morning. Press came out in the afternoon. But you would open up the paper, and there'd be articles in there from candidates that were running for office, but it would be based upon the issue. What was the policy that they were proposing? Then there'd be an analysis by the paper on what that meant to your family or to the area, the whole bit. I think our voters were much better informed then, you know? I mean, right. and just the whole bit. And I miss those days because, you know, I just gave an interview before coming on today here with a Japanese national television. And they were asking about the presidential election, you know? And they were referring to, and we'll talk about President Trump's conviction a little bit later, but they were asking about it. I said, well, it's the issues that matter. And the issues are, you know, gas prices are 50% higher than they were when Biden took office. You know, groceries are cost 20% more. Housing, the mortgage rates are more than double, you know, what they were. And I said, you know, if 10 million people come across the southern border here, you know, and we start talking about those things. Those are the issues which we should be debating as we talk about 2024, you know, and not, you know, going through what, you know, in many cases is what I and others term as lawfare.
Yeah.
To try to affect.
I'm more of a local state guy. Like, I think more, like, I love localizing issues because, you know, what happens on the national level and a lot of these issues that we hear about or being told to care about, you know, it doesn't really impact us here in southwestern Pennsylvania as much. And so, you know, again, we're different. Like, we are one of those bellwether areas that are pocketbook. You know, we have a history here. We have the Whiskey Rebellion. Like, you go through the history of this region and what we are, and then you have these outside groups and these outside on both parties, you know, talking about
on both houses. Yeah, absolutely.
Both. And like, we're sitting here and like, they're telling us and trying to dictate to us on how to run southwestern Pennsylvania. You know, I've seen it on both sides. And we have, you know, I work in Harrisburg on issues. One of them's on, you know, things to help drive businesses here. Sometimes Pennsylvania has to help with incentives. But, you know, when our Republican legislators work on these incentives, they get penalized by these national conservative groups. Well, of course they do, because they're based out of Texas. They're based out of other parts. They're not based out of Pennsylvania. And they don't want us driving businesses here, right? Because they're stealing it from other states. And that's, you know, and again, I know the arms race, and I get all that. I understand, you know, it's going to be an arms race state to state. But it gets frustrating when you're here, you know, born and bred in southwestern Pennsylvania. You want to help grow it. But you're being told and dictated by these other groups outside that our legislators, who are very good legislators, are getting punished by these national groups, right? Because of their national perspective on things. That's what we got to drive change on. And I don't know how we do it. I mean, I don't know the answer, Sam, but it's like, these are the frustrating things that we've seen over the years that, you know, and I think because we're so gravitated into national and internet, it's so easier to mobilize now, right? It's so much easier to keep these groups together. And for us, it's like, how do we localize a lot of the stuff and keep it local? Because I think better candidates win if we localize races.
Well, you brought up a great point. You know, one, understanding where the money's coming from. Now, you talked about these national groups that do this. I mean, and we saw when they found out that Russia was actually behind funding many of the environmental groups that opposed fracking, because that would take and, you know, lower the cost of energy or gas, which is their one of their primary drivers of their economy, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I just use them as just one example of where you have folks behind the scenes. You have no idea who's putting and funding these groups to go out and oppose something on an issue. And you know, you're absolutely right. One of my jobs here as the chairman of the Republican Committee of Allegheny County is to try to get Republicans elected to office. And once doing so, to ensure that we reelect those folks. And I've seen, particularly in this past cycle, you know, some of our folks being attacked for votes on bills that were never going to become law.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you had, there's a Gun Owners of America. You know, I'll use those folks as an example. I mean, they are so strict in that anything that they believe you should, I mean, they're for no restrictions whatsoever, no background check, no nothing. Okay. So you have here in Pennsylvania, this session here, the House was, it's a Democratic House. They had a one seat majority. I think it says two now temporarily.
Yeah. So they had the special, the specials come on.
So they had the slight a humble majority is how it should be referred to, but you know, and they're no different than Republicans, but for elections, they run messaging bills designed solely to put their opponents in a corner for electoral purposes. So you had one, they ran a bill that said, was basically like, would you promise not to take and prosecute someone that came from another state that may have banned abortion to Pennsylvania to get an abortion? So one of our state reps said, yes, she would not prosecute. So then what do the Democrats do? They then send out text messages to the Republicans in her district.
Within an hour, if not even minutes. Yeah, right. It's all predetermined.
I mentioned the Gun Owners of America, these groups. Yeah. You know, there was a bill that was put up there. And what the bill was about was It's just saying that if you're transferring long guns, okay, that you should have to do it at a federal firearms dealer, right? So that most folks would agree with something like that. But these folks ran out, and I have groups on the right that are refusing to support these candidates for state house, state senate, for Congress, because of a vote they took on something that was never, ever going to become law, but was just designed to be able to give the other side something to attack these folks on. And so not only they're going to get attacked on it anyway, but now they're trying to split the base of support that our folks have. And it's like, guys, the one thing we need to do is stick together.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. And it's that's the problem, is things can get magnified so fast and so easily these days, no matter, you know, how well, first off, the fact that you should never be the absolutes that we got to worry about, right? Mm-hmm. Is you have groups out there that you have to be at absolute 100%, or they're going to come after you. And again, it's on both sides. We have them everywhere, and it gets frustrating. And that's, as an elected official, you know, the challenge for them is, you know, what's the math? Like, what can I do because of where I am, and then kind of navigate this stuff? Because now they're worried about primaries. Primaries are really more the problem these days than getting to the general, because we're losing good candidates. You know, we're getting candidates that don't want to run because they don't want to deal with that primary apparatus, you know, about what are you? Are you a rhino? Or, you know, because you have one bad vote, or you say one bad thing, or what have you. And we have these derogatory terms is the issue. And no offense, again, Jim Roddy wouldn't be a Republican today in most cases. Mm-hmm. You know, Ronald Reagan would have a problem. Let's talk about the forefathers of our party and, you know, who would have problems today.
Abraham Lincoln. Well, and it's not just our party, but you look at the other party.
Yeah.
John Kennedy.
Yep.
Couldn't be a Democrat today.
Democrats have the same problem.
Yep. Rich Fitzgerald, the last county executive, would have a difficult time winning a Democrat primary today. You know? So both parties are changing, and the change isn't always for the good. And one of the things that bothers me, drives me absolutely bonkers, is the fact that so many, at least I pay attention to our party, okay? They turn their fire inwards. You know, they spend more time attacking other Republicans. And I'm sitting here and I'm on social media and I'm looking at a lot of the reaction that we're getting in regards to, again, the Trump verdict. Hmm. All right? And I just use that as an example. But I see folks who are influencers in the conservative movement attacking other Republicans.
Yeah, but aren't they trying to build up their numbers? Isn't that why they do it?
Well, exactly. Because, again, and people don't understand that. What I try to explain to folks, or I've told them, here's my view. Number one, in regards to a rhino, the folks that are the real rhinos are the ones that are calling everyone else a rhino. Because if you're a Republican, you support the nominee. You support the candidate that emerged from the primary. That's the candidate for the party. That's who you support. Picking and choosing because you don't believe somebody's concerned. If that's the candidate, you support them. So the folks that are the rhinos are the ones that are calling that to everybody else.
Yeah.
Well, and then secondly, when these folks look to leadership from somebody, I'm telling you, folks, if the person you're looking to for leadership to lead you to victory here or out of this electoral wasteland spends all their time attacking other Republicans or the national party or the state party or the county party, you need to look for other leaders, because these people aren't going to get you where you need to go. We need to be constructive. We need to come together. We need to focus on the things that we agree on and not kill each other on the things that we disagree on. You know, so we'll talk about that and more things. We'll be taking a break here shortly. But Rob, what has happened? Has it always been, I mean, we always talk about, you'll hear, oh, politics are incredibly polarized. It's never been this bad. And then you read what Thomas Jefferson and John Adams said about each other, right? I mean,
it can be cyclical. I mean, I think over time, I think people, you know, they get wised up to this. The question is, you know, when is it, right? Because look what's happening in the last couple elections. We have certain issues that are dominating the landscape of politics. Obviously, the Supreme Court case on abortion, right, is dominating what is happening in electoral politics. And for whatever side people are, that is the issue that is driving force. The question that people need to look at themselves is afterward, like, what what are we looking at is the end result. We're not going to know that for 5 to 10 years, probably, based on who's elected and so forth. But, you know, once we start seeing what these major issues and one issues have done and what that has brought about in terms of that next generation of leadership, I think we, you know, it's going to be an analysis that I think, and hopefully in 5 years, we can look back and say, that was, you know, what's the right move? I don't know. Like, this is the stuff that, you know, drives me crazy every day, trying to figure out how we get out of this cycle of where we are on things. So,
well, I have some ideas right after that, but folks, we're going to take a break here and we'll be right back on The Elephant in the Room. But for now, we've got to pay some bills. This is Sam DeMarco on The Elephant in the Room, WJAS 1320 AM and Talk 99.1 FM. We're back here at The Elephant in the Room, WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. This is your host, Sam DeMarco, and I'm speaking here with Rob Vecchio, partner at C&G Strategies, and you know, a public affairs organization. And Rob, we were talking a lot about earlier about Jim Roddy and the memorial services that he had earlier this week, as well as the portrait unveiling that was at the county courthouse. And, you know, I need to give a shout out here to former Pitt Chancellor Mark Nordenberg. Former Chancellor Nordenberg did a phenomenal job in taking and organizing this whole memorial service. And I can't thank him and the university enough for their generosity and their hospitality. Good friend of Jim's, Joe Mystic, and I, we were talking, you know, what could we do? We wanted to do something that could appropriately honor Jim for the man that he was and for the service that he provided this region, this community. And, you know, we're talking, trying to come up with what we could do. And Joe suggested, why don't I call Mark? So I said, great, a great idea. Got the number for him. And then he called me back. He said, hey, he's gonna talk to the university about it. And he came back and said, yeah, we'll do it. And he really took this on as a personal, you know, a project of passion of his. And, you know, we all worked together on this, but it was an incredible event. It was held out at Pitt's Alumni Hall, you know, beautiful room. They had it set up. You had multiple tables with many of the things, remembrances and mementos from Jim's service that his son and family had provided. You had video screens and you had speakers to talk about different phases in Jim's life. And we had, I mean, my gosh, when I had got there early, Mark told me they were scrambling to get additional chairs because of the folks. So you had probably 250 people there. I mean, it was full, and it was great to see so many leaders of the community. And Rob, we were talking, and I had folks walk up to me and say, hey, Sam, I want you to know I'm a lifelong Democrat.
Yeah.
But I voted for this man.
Yeah, I was sitting next to Dan Booker, who was Jim Roddy's Democrat. He led Democrats for Roddy back in the first election against Weck, and he led the transition, you know. So he was there. First Republican ever voted for was Jim Roddy. He was there, and then a lot of others in the room that we recognized. And again, it was a room that, again, looking towards where we are today in politics, can that room exist again? You know, because that was a room of leaders in the region putting their partisanship aside for the betterment of the community. And they all felt the same way when Roddy won that election over Weck. And that was the transition. But getting back to it, I agree with you. Mark Nordenberg and Pitt did a tremendous job. I know Roddy did a lot of work for Pitt, serving on the board and so forth. But it was beyond that. I mean, he was, the different stages of Roddy's life came out, and people just, the newer generation, they look at Roddy as that Republican first county exec, but that was the end of his career. Like, Jim was already successful. Jim was already successful, you know, working down in Atlanta, working with Ted Turner and, you know, creating whatever, CNN. There's always stories about, you know, how CNN came about. Yep. And Jim always joked about how
he lived it.
Jim always joked about how that was a bad idea to have 24-hour news. to, you know, just everything about him. It was, you know, his days of a Marine, of course, and like he liked to boat a lot and just going through the whole history of it. It was nice to see the different phases that they put together with the community and so forth, because he was literally the one they called upon for every board and authority issue that was happening, you know, saving the regatta from that to chairing the Port Authority,
Oh, yeah.
And these are Democrats in Alcosan. And these are Democrats that called him and put him on there.
Yep.
So think about based on that. And imagine if we tried to put a Jim Roddy type, you know, elevate him to some Republican nominee and try to get that, knowing that he got all these relationships, all these Democrats. In today's political world, how do you get someone like that through elected office? I don't know that answer because I think it's harder today.
It may be harder, but you said something a moment ago. You said you don't know if you could put that room together again today. And I would say that you can because I witnessed it in the last election cycle here in Allegheny County. You know, when I attended fundraisers or events in people's homes for Joe Rocky and Steve Zappala, there were mixed crowds in there. There were Democrats, there were Republicans, there were independents who were all in that room coming together because they were concerned about the future of their community, you know? And I had gotten calls after this from friends that I had made that say, Sam, we need to keep this going, you know? And I think, and that's extremely important. You know, that's a coalition that if we are able to keep something like that alive can be tapped at the right time. And I don't think we realize how close we came with Joe Rocky to winning the county executive's race with 48.63% of the vote. You know, all we were missing was Rain and Johnny Cochran, okay, which could have helped get us across the finish line, you know, which is what they talk about when Jim beat Sirleck back in 1999, you know, having dealt with. So
that story was amazing, right? The fact that, you know, the whole Johnny Cochran, that came up in the celebration the other day. Johnny Cochran's name will always be synonymous with politics in Allegheny County.
Yes, yes, yes. Guest of Sirleck, yes. And, you know, when I read, I looked up more, and I'd had the opportunity to sit on panels, be interviewed with Searle. And no question, he was a brilliant man, you know. So we just recently lost two giants, you know. But when I read the history, I didn't realize the degree of the fighting that he did within his own party.
He did.
You know?
Yeah, he was very similar, right?
Yes. And it was something. And to your point, it was, again, listening to Jim, to the folks, the Democrats that did the Democrats for Jim, you know, the faith leaders, you know, from the Black community that came out and supported Jim. And I think the one thing with Jim is he had shared with me some of his thoughts, and to sort of paraphrase it, but when he came in, he offered everybody a seat at the table. And some of those folks came and took those seats, but didn't have the same degree of interest in serving the community. Some of them made it political. And he was blocked in many cases from being able to do some of the things he wanted to do to move the county forward, you know, by some of the folks that were on boards and authorities because they allowed it to get political in too many cases.
Absolutely. No, it's true. Like there's things that he tried hard, even with the coalition he was able to build to get some of these accomplished. But, you know, I know there was a story talking about one of the biggest issues, like a huge issue for Allegheny County that, you know, is also almost a four-letter word, and that's disincorporation, right, mm-hmm. of municipalities. And there was a discussion by Jim Roddy and Dan Honorato and Rich Fitzgerald, and they talked about it, and Rich talked about it that day. About he thought, because he had all of them in the room, that they would go lobby the legislature to get this bill through, and of course it died on the spot. And it was because of, you know, no one wants to give up a fiefdom. You know, 130 municipalities in Allegheny County, the whole goal was, can we somehow consolidate within reason, right? That you can just shrink the amount of governments in Allegheny County and make it more efficient. But it has been an issue that's been around Allegheny County for forever. And so, you know, it's Republicans, Democrats have all tried, and then combined have tried, and just nothing changes. So that's one of those issues that he tried.
And I think that's an issue that needs to be revived. I think, you know, I was a supporter. You know, when I sat down, I came into it and I'd heard a little bit about it. I went and sat down with Frank Lucchino, mm-hmm. who had been one of the folks that started this. I sat down, read the information with folks from the Institute of Politics. I had many a conversation with both Jim and Rich. And what was clear was this wasn't designed to take and reduce municipalities by force. This was designed to allow some who were struggling financially and no longer able to provide the services to their residents that they expect to be able to receive those. Because right now, the way the law in Pennsylvania stands, if you're a municipality that can no longer, you know, provide a police force for your municipality or your public works, you become a ward of the state. So in county government, I saw it firsthand. When Wilkinsburg came to the county,
they had been doing,
they had been doing business with North Versailles. Mm-hmm. And North Versailles wanted to increase what they charged them, you know, exponentially. They weren't able to afford it. They came to the county for help. So the county agreed and signed a contract where the county police provided patrol down there. And I'm sorry, I said Wilkinsburg, it's Wilmerding, but where the county police provided patrols down there. And that worked very well, although we didn't renew the contract because we were going to take and raise the cost. But the point being, those folks in that area, if we weren't doing that, they would have to rely on state police coming from either Greensburg or Moon. Can you imagine yourself in a situation that's critical and you're looking for help and you have to wait for that? Okay. So it makes sense. And there are a number of municipalities here in Allegheny County that are having financial issues, and there will probably be more as times move forward. But this was just a way to take care of the residents of Allegheny County, not a way to to take and create a
one government.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll take it a step further because, you know, I dealt with this when I worked in the state house. We had a community that's still around, Heidelberg. Mm-hmm. They couldn't, they didn't have enough. They had five council seats. This was back in 1998, I think it was. And I don't know if they still have five council seats or not, but they had five council seats. They couldn't get anybody to run for council. So nobody wanted to run the government in the local municipality. So what do you do? And so they came to us and they essentially said, can you help us? We talked to the surrounding municipalities. We talked to, you know, Scott and Collier and Carnegie just to see if anybody would be willing to just do like some merger discussions. Mm-hmm. And what they came back, I guess, financially was, you know, Heidelberg had a police chief who had a pension issue. So they didn't want to take on that cost. And so that was one of the issues that was holding it back. I'm sure there was other things that I don't recollect. But, you know, that was one of the reasons why we started working on it, on disincorporation, because Heidelberg needed a way out and they were not allowed to go to business. And so that was back then. Now, again, I think they've changed, and the people probably are still there, so I'm sure I'm opening up a can of worms for some people right now, but that was one of the things that they were looking to do, and they came to us for help and guidance. And, you know, the best way to do it was voluntary disincorporation and then allowing them to merge with one of the municipalities.
Right.
Beyond that. But, again, the costs are really, the legacy costs are what hold it back. That was one of the issues that I think, you know, was hard to resolve, maybe today's to this day is still a problem.
Well, when I talked, when Rich and I talked about it, the intent was that that municipality was still responsible for the debt that they had incurred.
Right.
So part of the tax revenues, their tax revenues would be redirected to the county, but a portion of those tax revenues would go to cover those costs on that debt. So that was to try to address those legacy issues. And like you said, if you had two entities combining through a merging, you know, what union would represent them, and you would, you know, would, you'd have to work with some of those things. But
well,
at the end
thing
of the day,
you
it's
have
about serving the people.
You also have the overhead. Like if you have the administrative of functions of the municipality taken away or whatever or relieved, mm-hmm. you can use that 15% towards the debt and expedite the payment of the debt, right?
Yep.
And so that was the thought process that we had back in the 90s. Anyway, that's what that was.
Well, I think it was a good idea, and I think, you know, it's just something that maybe time will come. You know, leadership in the legislature is different today, you know, than it was then, and perhaps it's something that could be revisited. But I know that, you know, again, when you have both Democrats and Republicans, when you have Jim, Dan, and Rich all on board mm-hmm. with it, and, you know, I was in that conference room the day we had the press conference, and we had, you know, I had State Senator Randy Volokovich, State Rep. Jason Ortiz, Ty Hell, English. I mean, you had Democrats and Republicans all behind, you know, trying to take and push this.
Right.
You know, again, sometimes it's a timing. Sometimes timing is everything.
Yeah. Well, again, it gets back to, you know, people that have been in the government and have helped run the governments. They see this as an issue, you know, and there's reasons why everyone bipartisan see this as an issue. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, the other thing was interesting because when we did this in the 90s, you know, I actually Representative Tom Stevens actually represents, he actually introduced the bill, you know, back then, and he went to the ALUM conference to present it. Imagine how that went, by the way. And so we went right in the lion's den. And of course, he got booed. Nobody wanted it. And then afterward, people came up to him and, you know, thanked him for doing it and putting it out there. But it was one of the challenges we also dealt with back then was that's when the city of Pittsburgh went in Act 47. They had the financial recovery. So we actually had to exempt the city of Pittsburgh from the bill. Like, they couldn't disincorporate
The county didn't want to be responsible for paying their bills.
And we didn't want the, their and debt. we wanted to guard against the whole, you know, Philadelphia model, which we have city county as one. And so we wanted to make sure that that municipalities did it survive on some level. We just didn't want 130, right? We thought the smaller ones should at least look at it. And I think there was actually a report done back then by the late Dr. David Miller from Pitt. He was one of the leaders of this. And he, you know, had this chart. And I think we were only talking about 15 to 20% of the municipalities. But that would have meant a lot, you know, if we were able to do that.
Well, when folks go back, if anybody that goes back and looks at the history of how we came up with all these municipalities, many of them came about because there'd be a company that opened up a factory or whatever, and they wanted to be able to manage their own taxation. So they create their municipality or whatever, and you know, then these folks, they no longer exist.
Or they got a liquor license.
Yes.
Yeah, Seven Springs.
Yeah, there you go. And now they no longer exist. They haven't existed for decades.
Right.
Okay? Yeah. But the municipality is still there. And you have some of these municipalities that only have like 50 voters.
Where it takes 500 to create a municipality, by the way.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I mean, so that was the other thing that was the other concept we were looking into back then was if your population dropped below what it took to actually create a municipality, that you would automatically disincorporate.
I think the trigger, you know, and again, where the bill eventually was when, you know, I was talking to Rich about it, right? It was that we wouldn't force, again, nobody was going to be forced to do this. This would all have to be done by the voters, you know, and here's the problem that you have when you start talking about regionalization, you know, in these mergers. Haves never want to take on the have-nots because they assume that their taxpayers are paying for the folks in the other municipality and that their services will be diluted, okay? But this wasn't to sort of force that, but it was they were looking at it from the county perspective, you know? So again, public works, the police, you know, when you're a ward of the state's not set up to provide those to your communities where the county basically is. So it was just to allow the nearest next largest political entity to be able to take and absorb, you know, that. And Rob, you talked about the ALUM thing. And, you know, for folks who don't know, that's the Allegheny League of Municipalities. And it's something that they hold multiple conferences every year. But all the mayors and council members or supervisors or commissioners from all the different municipalities go to this. But there was a great deal of resistance in the past, Rob, because it's, you know, some folks like being, you know, the big fish in the small pond.
Yeah,
you know, and
that's exactly right.
You just hope that, you know, as time went by and we saw things as you brought up talking about in Heidelberg, where they couldn't even get people to fill the seats.
That's an issue.
You know, right.
If you don't want to govern yourselves, what do you do?
Right.
And so there has to be a mechanism for that. But that's what we try to do at that point.
So we'll have to figure something out.
Well, somebody's going to have to. Maybe it's you later, right? You're the elected one.
I'm old. You know, I got to be careful. I won't find myself in a pond. I'll find myself in a net. You know, I'm not careful, right? Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So, but no, listen, you know, again, the University of Pittsburgh did a phenomenal job. Former Chancellor Mark Nuremberg did job. And I ran into Samantha Balbier there, who I had known from her days when she worked for the Forbes Funds, Greater Pittsburgh Nonprofit, but she manages the Institute of Politics now. And I was thanking her, and she said, hey, this was all Mark.
Yeah.
You know, he said this was his personal.
Yeah, it was interesting because I was getting calls when I first heard that he was leading this. And then people were asking me just for help here and there. But I was working the other event with the with the portraits, and I worked with the Kern County Executive's Office just to, you know, make sure that the Roddy people were part of that and getting the right people there. But it was interesting because he we had a nice dialogue about it and reconnecting, because I hadn't talked to the former chancellor in a while. But what was nice is, just again, I keep going back to the day of politics and then seeing that room and seeing who came out. I mean, we people all over the country flew in for this.
Yes.
And we have federal judges in that room. Like, there are people, and a lot of them just were thankful for, you know, help from Roddy and so forth. And they just wanted to honor the guy and just be there. And people dropped at everything to be there for that moment.
Well, that was again, that was important to me. And I can't tell you the sleep that I lost trying to come up and ensure that we put something, you know, together that was worthy of him. And like I said, I can't thank Joe Mystic, Mark Nornberg, and obviously Jim's son, you know, James Dale, enough for their help in doing so. So that was great. So now, you know, we move on here, and it's sort of what's next, you know? So we have 6 minutes left. Okay. Rob is a interested observer. I mean, you're not involved in the politics now. You do the public affairs, and as a lobbyist, I mean, you are in politics, but you work with both sides.
I do.
Because what's important is getting things done.
Okay? You got to get things done. Cut the noise, we like to call it.
If you were able to, which you are, to be able to give a message to our listeners, you know, on how to positively move forward, what would you tell them?
I'd tell them that, you know, don't stay off social media. Turn your television off. be a strategic thinker and learn about the candidates. I mean, what I'm worried about are campaigns are, and we're seeing on both sides, we might as well, we're electing inanimate objects these days. You know what? It doesn't matter what people are, what they believe, because they're getting painted in such a bad direction. Everybody's got skeletons. Everybody's got issues. And they're just being magnified, and if they don't have enough, they'll make them up. And that's what we're seeing. What we're seeing, and I'm seeing this in the world of what I do, is we see it translating into D.C., of course, and we definitely see it translating into Harrisburg. And so what we've said before is, you know, D.C. is spilling into Harrisburg as well, and what we're seeing in terms of a lot of extreme politics. Mm-hmm. And if people want to come in and they have their positions and so forth, fine, and defending it and so forth. One thing I do give credit to a lot of the new elected officials is they don't back down. Like, they come in, and when they come in, they come in guns a-blazing, and they're like, they have their issues, and I give them credit for, like, at least standing their ground and where they are on things. There's definitely more of that today, but the one thing that I'm concerned about is the lack of compromise, which is always that, you know, that taboo for people that they think compromise is the bad word, but you have to. That's why we've had late budgets in Harrisburg. You know, Harrisburg can't pass something on time because people are holding their ground on certain things. And again, you got to fight for your issues. There's no doubt about it. But at some point, you got to pivot and make sure you're not punishing organizations or something long term, because people are impacted. Nonprofits are not impacted. We've seen it a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that frustrates me is that what you're talking about, D.C. politics seeping into Pennsylvania, it didn't used to be, but now it's seeping into folks at the local level as well. You know, I used to say that county politics was different. You know, in Washington, folks could go to the separate sides of the room and argue all day and get nothing done. And it didn't matter. Your life went on. Okay. And, in local politics here, D or an R, you had to work together because people needed the roads repaired. The police come when you call 911. All the different services that we manage, right? But now, unfortunately, we are getting people who run for local office thinking it's their opportunity to bring these national or cultural issues, you know, to the table. And it's just got a, you know, so it's gone to the point where it makes it difficult for us to even conduct business sometimes at the local level. I mean, what is Allegheny County Council? What is our role in declaring ceasefires in Gaza? I'm sure Hamas isn't sitting there in their tunnels in Rafah waiting to hear, oh my gosh, you know, Councilwoman so-and-so said this. Oh, that's it. Release the hostages and let's surrender. It, you know what I mean? So we need to get back to really what this whole thing was intended to do. What Jim epitomized was it's about service. You know, serving the people, making sure the taxpayers get what they're paying for, which is good, effective government, and you know, let the other folks fight. If you want to fight, run for Congress.
Go to D.C. You know, right?
Go to D.C.
Go to D.C.
Exactly.
Let's keep the local and state, you know, back to local and state issues.
Well, Rob, this has been a fascinating hour here, and you know, as always, when we start talking, you know, we run out of time. But hey, before we go, I want to just mention to our listeners here, we all know Thursday afternoon, late afternoon, President Trump was found guilty by a jury in Manhattan. I issued a statement and I said, let's keep in mind that the jurors ruled on the information they were permitted to hear. So this could be the rare case in which the public understands the case better than the jury. I think history will judge this as a personal scandal of no bearing on public policy that was twisted into a criminal prosecution by an elected Democrat district attorney. It's worth noting that every other jurisdiction declined this case, and President Trump was seriously hindered by the judge's refusal to permit the head of the Federal Election Commission to testify in a case that presumably pivoted on election law. As we expand the reach of prosecutors in the electoral realm, we come close to rendering American politics unworkable in governance and exercise in litigation rather than democracy. Now, President Trump now faces sentencing on July 11th, 4 days before he is to be nominated at the Republican National Convention, and long after the appellate courts in New York will be asked to correct this mistake. His party will nominate him for president, and the American people will be the final meaningful jury. And that, folks, is my statement, and that today is our show on the Elephant in the Room here on WJAS 1320 AM and Talk 99.1 FM Talk. Have a great day.